Mr. Necker, how are you this morning, sir?
Good. Believe it or not, we're going to talk about aquaculture.
You're going to wear it out. Ward Oyster Company.
Kathy, I'll get right to the slides. Ward Oyster Company is requesting authorization, or after-the-fact authorization, to retain 566 deployed cages and authorization to deploy additional 4-foot by 4-foot by 2-foot high aquaculture cages at 5 locations on his leased oyster ground in the Ware River in the vicinity of Jarvis Point and Schley in Gloucester County. A maximum of 2,500 cages are proposed to be deployed in waters between 4 and 6 feet deep at mean low water. The cages are proposed to be deployed as 2 cage units marked with a single buoy. Project is protested by numerous residents in the vicinity. Before I get into too much further, I would like to add that there is an additional protest letter that I've slipped in your packet. It was sent by email and somehow or another got messed up in the routing, but I wanted to make sure you were aware it was in there. The Ward Oyster Company is located along the northern shoreline of the Ware River in the Ware Neck area of Gloucester County. A little bit closer view of that quad sheet. Mr. John Vigliotta owns Ward Oyster Company and also runs his Mobjack Bay Seafood Company out of the facility. As I understand it, Mobjack Bay Seafood is a wholesale and retail company and is not directly in the aquaculture business, but you may find it referred to in some of the letters that we have in there. The company sells and distributes both cultured and wild-caught oysters and clams. The company is located near Schley, and the cages are proposed to be deployed between Jarvis Point, which is this point down here, and Schley. This is an aerial photo of Mr. Vigliotta's facility. They're seeking authorization to retain 566 cages that are currently deployed and authorization to deploy additional cages. The square cages have 4-foot long sides, are 2 feet tall, and are proposed to be deployed as 2 cage units with a bridle and a single buoy coming up to limit the number of buoys associated with the cages. The buoy is approximately half size of a traditional crab pot buoy. Mr. Vigliotta states in the application that he intends to raise the oysters to market size from an initial size of about 2 millimeters. The small oysters will first be placed in cages with a half-inch wire mesh insert. At the smaller size, the cages will hold about 5,000 oysters. Once the oysters reach about 2 inches in size, the oysters will be moved to cages with a 1-inch mesh and grown to market size. At this larger size, the cages will hold between 1,500 and 2,000 oysters. The cages are designed to provide protection from cow nose rays and other predators and are intended to be deployed year-round. They will be periodically removed by means of a 16-foot by 32-foot barge for cleaning, grading, and calling. Mr. Vigliotta states the cages should not go more than 4 months without cleaning and grading. Actually, he recently said that that might be as long as 6 to 9 months. His plan calls for starting with 500 to 1,000 cages and growing to a maximum of 2,500 cages. He'd like to maintain an inventory of about 10 million oysters. Cages are proposed to be deployed at 5 sites in the Ware River. All of the sites are in waters ranging between 4 and 6 feet at mean low water. I've just arbitrarily numbered them sites 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Site number 1 measures 100 by 150 feet and is located approximately 150 feet upstream of the Ward Oyster Company property and approximately 300 feet offshore. A maximum of 100 cages, and that would be 50 floats, are proposed at this location. If all 100 cages were deployed at this site, the cages would cover approximately 10% of the bottom. Site 2 is a similar size, 100 by 150, same number of oysters. It's about 650 feet downstream of the Ward Oyster Company property, and again, about 300 feet offshore. Maximum of 100 cages would be are proposed at this location, and that would also occupy about 10% of the bottom. Site number three is kind of an elongated diamond shape with two sides measuring 300 feet and two sides measuring 600 feet. It's about 166,000 square feet. A maximum of 300 cages are proposed at this site, and deployment of all 300 cages at this site would encroach on approximately 3% of the river bottom within that area. Sites 4 and 5 are both downstream of Jarvis Point, and they measure between 200 feet by 800 feet, and are intended to have 1,000 cages at each site, 500 floats at each site. Deployment in that area would take about 10% of the bottom. This is a drawing of the cage design. It's a little bit different than the earlier two. This one is 4x4 by 2 feet tall. It's a 5/8 inch rebar frame with plastic-coated wire similar to the others. It would also have a wire top. These are some cages that are on the property now. The Ward Oyster Company is actually involved in three separate activities that involve the deployment of cages on their leased oyster ground. They relay shellfish from polluted waters and depurate the clams in cages within a designated area on their leased bottom. This relaying activity is conducted in accordance with 4 VAC 20-310, etc. The cages are sealed, deployed, and recovered, and the seals broken under VMRC supervision. The deployment of cages under this activity does not require a subaqueous permit because it is regulated by the Fisheries and Law Enforcement Divisions under a separate section of Title 28.2. They also do two other things. They use the cages for wet storage of clams and oysters. The wet storage occurs in the same type of cages, but the cages are deployed outside of the designated relay area in what the Health Department calls a wet storage area. This wet storage permit from the Health Department is basically a certification that the water is clean enough to grow and store shellfish as a marketable product. That permit, however, only designates the waters approved for the storage of shellfish. It does not authorize any cages on or structures on the bottom. Accordingly, a subaqueous permit is required for this wet storage activity. Finally, the company uses these same size cages for the grow out of the seed oysters to the marketable product. So it's the wet storage and the aquaculture products, the cages associated with those that are actually requiring a permit. This is the barge they use to deploy and retrieve the cages. It measures 16 by 32. You'll note the two overhead I-beams that will allow them to deploy two cages at the same time with a single buoy. This is a drawing that was included in Mr. Vigliotta's application to illustrate where some of the cages are currently deployed. Mr. Vigliotta has stated that he believed his current deployment of cages for wet storage was authorized since he had received a wet storage permit from the Health Department and authorization from VMRC to import clams from certain localities outside of Virginia. Neither of these authorizations, however, authorizes the deployment of cages. About the time we began receiving inquiries from the general public regarding whether Ward Oyster Company had the necessary permits to conduct their operations, Mr. Vigliotta contacted staff and asked if he needed permits to deploy the cages. Soon after he was told the permits were required, we received this permit application. This is another one of the drawings that Mr. Vigliotta provided with the initial application. I've assisted him in preparing some other drawings, which you'll see a little bit later on, that are a little bit clearer. But one thing I would like to note, that there are cages that are inboard of these proposed areas that will be moved a little bit further offshore. I'd also like to highlight this area here. He's got shown as his what he calls a polluted square. That's the relay area, and it is inboard of site number three. This is a recent aerial of the Schley area. Ward Oyster Company has just at the left-hand side of the screen. The Commission's on-bottom shellfish aquaculture regulation authorizes the deployment of certain aquaculture structures on leased bottom, provided they don't extend more than a foot off the bottom. Structures conforming with this regulation do not require a subaqueous permit. As you've heard earlier, though, since these are buoyed structures, they do occupy the water column, and a subaqueous permit is required. The economic benefits of an aquaculture operation of this size are significant. Additionally, cultured oysters provide many of the same environmental benefits as the wild stocks. They filter large volumes of water, which may remove excess nutrients and improve local water clarity. Additionally, the structures in the oysters themselves will provide substrate and habitat for other animals. The General Assembly has passed resolutions recognizing the value of the shellfish aquaculture industry and has directed studies to identify unnecessary regulatory burdens to streamline the permitting process. To date, the Commission has only been able to use its subaqueous permitting process to authorize the deployment of aquaculture structures. Both the industry and VMRC believe it would be more appropriate to regulate aquaculture activities through the use of a water column lease program. In fact, in 2004, the General Assembly enacted water column leasing legislation. However, it was contingent on funding, and that funding was never provided. According to the legislation, never took effect. This project is protested by numerous nearby residents. Their concerns include impacts on navigation, aesthetics, and other uses of the waterway. They cite some environmental concerns and note that the application was unclear and difficult to understand. Although not the specific subject of this application, some express concerns over the ongoing clam relay operations. Mr. Tommy Leggett submitted a letter on behalf of the Chesapeake Bay Foundation in support of the project. In his letter, he states that the farm-raised oysters are a renewable resource that can provide water quality and habitat benefits. He also notes that although the Chesapeake Bay Foundation's aquaculture operation on Sarah Creek originally encountered some opposition, they've not received any complaints from boaters or watermen that use the creek since then. Sites 1, 2, and 3 are shown in orange on this map. Although not part of the application, the red box, as I pointed out before, is the clam relay area. This is a 2002 aerial with the oyster ground and the proposed sites highlighted in blue. Staff has met with some of the protestants and noted they are generally less concerned with the cages proposed to be deployed downstream near Jarvis Point. That would be these two rectangular boxes down here. The original application only proposed the deployment of 1,500 cages at those sites. After meeting with Mr. Vigliotta, he agreed to propose 2,000 of the cages be deployed near Jarvis Point, reducing the number of the upriver cages at these three sites to a total of 500. In addition to moving many of the proposed cages to the Jarvis Point sites, Mr. Vigliotta suggested additional conditions to address some of the concerns addressed by the protestants. He developed the idea to deploy the cages in paired units to reduce the number of floats. He agreed to limit the number of cages stored on the upland to a maximum of 600. He agreed to switch to an electric pressure washer and pump to reduce noise associated with a gasoline-type pump and washer. He also agreed to operate the business only between 8:30 and 6 on weekdays and 8:30 to 1 on Saturdays. He also agreed and said he would be willing to change the color of the buoys to blue or brown to minimize visual impacts. Finally, he said he would agree to have the project reviewed by the commission again after the initial five-year period. This is a closer view of sites 1, 2, 3, starting at the top, 1, 2, 3, on down. Site 3 is between 750 and 900 feet offshore and with 300 proposed cages and approximately 150 buoys. Mr. Vigliotta's relay area is inshore of site number 3. In addition to the relay cages, there are aquaculture cages deployed inshore of Site 3 right now. Those cages would be moved further offshore to Site Number 3. A little bit closer view. This is a closer view of Sites 1 and 2, and this is the Ward Oyster Company property. This is a closer view of Sites 4 and 5 near Jarvis Point. Again, they're 200 by 800 with 1,000 cages, 500 floats proposed at each site. There is an opening provided between the two areas. That opening is for a shortcut through Jarvis Point that's used by some shallow draft vessels at higher water. In their report dated April 12th, the Virginia Institute of Marine Science notes the presence of submerged aquatic vegetation in the shallow waters near Jarvis Point. That actually shows up on our map, too. It's this area right here. They added that the proposed deployment in waters with a minimum depth of minus 4 feet at mean low water would minimize the likelihood of the cages being placed on SAV, but they recommended careful placement and management to avoid direct impacts. I think the deployment at 4 feet will avoid that. The health department states the project is in compliance with their sanitary regulations for marinas and boat moorings. All of the cages are proposed to be deployed on oyster ground that's currently leased by Ward Oyster Company. This is the VIMS map showing the SAV in the vicinity of the project. You'll note that that's that point that I showed a minute ago. There's also some up near the Schley area inshore of where the cages are proposed. It's a closer view of Sites 4 and 5, and you can note the contours on this map. These are in meters, so it is consistent with the 4 to 6 foot depths. It's unfortunate that the water column leasing legislation was never funded and cannot be used to evaluate and authorize aquaculture activities of this type. Staff believes such a lease program would have benefited both the public and the applicant. Although the project may interfere with certain public uses within the immediate area, staff recognizes the numerous potential economic and environmental benefits associated with the commercial production of 10 million oysters. Some types of boating and fishing activities will be impacted by the presence of the cages and buoys. However, that is often the case with structures and facilities authorized by the commission. The proper siting of structures is therefore crucial to minimize those impacts. Sites 1 and 2 are located only about 300 feet channel to the shoreline, and we believe the deployment of cages and the associated activities so close to the shoreline has a greater potential to adversely affect the nearby property owners than those cages located further offshore. Unfortunately, the location of the minus 6 foot contour limits the option to move sites 1 and 2 further channelward without impacting navigation. Site number 3 appears large enough to accommodate all of the cages proposed for sites 1 and 2, in addition to those currently deployed for site 3. In fact, if all 500 cages were deployed at Site 3, the cages would occupy less than 5% of the available bottom within that irregular diamond shape. The cages are proposed to be deployed in waters deep enough to avoid direct impacts to SAV, but still outside the main channel of the Ware River. The deployment areas in the vicinity of Jarvis Point have been sited to avoid a shallow shortcut through the submerged point. Therefore, we do not believe the proposed structures will significantly affect navigation traversing the Ware River. Nevertheless, this is a new type of activity, and unforeseen impacts and conflicts may arise. Accordingly, staff is reluctant to recommend approval of a permit that would authorize the structures to remain in perpetuity. We believe a review after 5 years would give the Commission an opportunity to reevaluate the project and any unforeseen impacts that may result. The water column leasing legislation that was never funded had a similar provision. Accordingly, we recommend approval of the project with the following conditions. Sites 1 and 2 shall not be authorized, but the cages proposed for those sites may be deployed at Site 3. The corners of the deployment sites shall be surveyed, and the dimensions of the site shall not exceed the dimensions identified in the staff evaluation. The survey of the sites shall become a part of the VMRC permit. No cages shall be deployed in waters deeper than 6 feet, nor shallower than 4 feet at mean low water. No cages shall be deployed within beds of SAV. The permit and authorization to retain the structure shall be valid for a period of 5 years. After 5 years, the permittee may request the commission reevaluate the project and authorize the activity for an additional period of time. Permittee shall submit annual reports of production. Should a water column lease procedure be implemented, the project shall be reevaluated and, if deemed acceptable, converted to a lease upon termination of the initial 5-year permit. The public shall not be excluded from any areas not physically occupied by the authorized structures. The permittee shall maintain all structures and markers and shall remove all structures upon their falling into a state of disrepair or upon cessation of their use as aquaculture structures. Structures must be marked and located in accordance with applicable U.S. Coast Guard requirements. I actually received a letter from the Coast Guard yesterday stating that they would like to see some markers on the corners, and they described those markers as get the term they actually use, but it's a warning, and they can write inside of that warning box what's, you know, either aquaculture or cages, and you know that might be something that we would use on all of these sites. They'd like both sides of the boxes at Jarvis Point and the other ones marked as well. Finally, we recommend the assessment of an annual royalty for the encroachment of the structures over state-owned submerged land at the rate of 0.5 cents per square foot. The royalty should be based on the area of the sites requested, not the physical dimensions occupied by the individual cages. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from the commission?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Robbins.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions. If you could go back to the photograph, perhaps, the close-in aerial photos of sites 1 and 2.
Okay. All right.
You've indicated that in your opinion in the staff evaluation that these sites, since they're closer to shore, have a greater potential for conflict. And site number one, is that not directly in front of the Ward Oyster Company?
No, unfortunately it's not.
Okay, I was confused about that. Okay.
In front of the upstream property owner.
All right. And what is that area landward of sites 1 and 2, is that all residential or is that mixed use or what's the nature of that?
Mainly residential. The Ward Oyster Company property is kind of sandwiched in between a lot of residential properties.
Okay, and there appear to be a couple of piers in between the two sites, but not immediately landward thereof, right?
Yeah, this pier here is Ward Oyster Company pier. It has aquaculture floats along the side of it that were authorized some time ago.
Okay, so the site is adjacent to the Ward Oyster Company pier.
Yeah, the upstream property line of Ward Oyster Company is right along here.
Are there any other piers landward of the sites 1 and 2, then, that are in immediate conflict?
This pier is close to site number 2.
Right.
There's not a pier currently on this property, I don't believe, but it's... there was actually a boat up in the marsh here. Whether they just launched from shore, I don't
know. Right. Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Is the Ward Oyster Company represented?
Yes.
I would like to ask Chip if he could possibly save that PowerPoint for later on.
Sure. Swear the testimony shall give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing else but the truth. So help you God.
I do.
State your full name and position for the record.
John Vigliotta, owner of Ward Oyster Company and Mobjack Bay Seafood.
Mr. Vigliotta, good to have you.
I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to stand before you and request a permit to continue to raise oysters and wet store clams and oysters. I truly, in good faith, believe that I was and may still be complying with the law, as the law is very confusing. I first need to address the fact that my application is being presented as an after-effect permit, and I am being vilified and may continue to be vilified today as a person with no regard for the law. I have on numerous occasions expressed my unwillingness and concern to Chip Nykerk over my permit being presented as an after-the-fact permit, when in actuality, whether or not I am in compliance is ambiguous at best. I have had a VMRC relay permit since 1987. I have had a Virginia Department of Health wet storage permit since 1993. Part of the Virginia Department of Health permit application that was faxed to me when I first applied for wet storage reads as follows. Wet storage applies to the holding of shellfish in natural bodies of water in containers or in floats, and thus applies not only to the typical certified shellfish operations, but also applies to cage or off-bottom aquaculture of shellfish intended for sale. I have a copy of that if you'd like to see that. I can hand it to you.
You can give it to Chip. Leave it here for the record.
My business also holds in a series of up to 5 permits from Habitat, one of which is a specific permit to store seed oysters in surface floats by my dock, which you saw in one of the pictures, and I'll point out to you if we can get that up again. I have also been involved in a series of seed clam and seed oyster mitigation projects with VMRC, which were maintained and kept in the same cages. In addition, I have petitioned VMRC a total of 20 times for permission to bring clams into the state from out-of-state sources, specifically to wet store in Virginia. I was given permission to do so 20 times. 16 requests were for clean clams, and 4 different years and times were for relay clams. The procedure for both is the same. You request permission from VMRC 30 days in advance, and you need to get a VIMS clean pathology report before VMRC will give you permission in the form of a permit letter. I would like to read to you an excerpt from the letter that VMRC sent to me addressing a request for clean clam storage dated February 5, 2004, signed by Commissioner Pruitt. In further consideration of the unique nature of your annual requests to import clams from the same areas for wet storage, and consistent with Code Section 28.2-825, I am authorizing an annual permit for your activity. It was recently pointed out to me that this letter pertains only to bringing shellfish into the state to wet store, but does not address the methods to do such. Since I took over Ward's Oyster Company in 1991, the only method that we have ever used is the cage system. These cages were constructed to meet VMRC regulations of height, profile, and skids, and are the same cages that are inspected each year by the VMRC Planning Department. The reason I use cages is because the count was raised. The Army Corps spent close to $15 million to find out that the rays eat the oysters. I can attest to the fact that they can eat up to a large topneck clam also. There have been as many as 15 relay companies in the past. Now there are only 3, most of which have used and all of which are now currently using cage methods to wet store shellfish. The relay procedure requires you to keep the product in the water for 15 days, with no requirement to remove it after that. If they are not removed, it does not be wet storage. The cages I use for relay and wet storage in aquaculture are identical in size and storage techniques. There is so much gray area in the law that I do not believe that there is a clear policy addressing wet storage specifically by VMRC, and this needs to be clarified. In the meantime, I wish to conduct my activities without fear of noncompliance, so I have applied to Habitat for a permit for my aquaculture and wet storage, whether this is redundant or not. I currently have approximately 500 cages in the water with about 3 million oysters and a small amount of wet storage. The majority of my cages are for aquaculture, and I have been raising oysters for 5 years and have always felt I was doing a great service to the Ware River and the community. In 2006, I have employed 23 families, 37 watermen, and done business with 76 different businesses in the state of Virginia, not to mention out of state. I have sold approximately 1 million market oysters since I have started, and am probably the largest point source of oyster spat in the Ware River. I also am the largest commercial or individual contributor to the improvement of water quality in Ware River. I was under the impression that the activities which I undertake were very positive for the environment, and this is why VMRC, VIMS, NOAA, and the Chesapeake Bay Foundation, and Army Corps, to name a few, were all trying to promote this activity. and here I am doing this successfully, and I'm being viewed as an environmental hazard. As I said, I have approximately 500 cages now and wish to grow possibly to 2,500 total in the future. After submitting my original request and advertising in the paper, it was brought to my attention that certain parties had organized resistance and raised concerns about my permit, much of this due to misinformation. I tried to look at these concerns and adjust my permit to address any potential problem. 80% of my cage deployment was moved to two locations. One is a quarter of a mile from landowners, the other one is a half a mile from landowners, and both are in a non-navigable part of the river. Also, a series of 8 concessions were added to my permit for the 20% that were closer to the landowners in an effort to try to ease their concerns. Due to the amount of misinformation circulating concerning my permit, I welcome the opportunity to clarify just what Ward's Oyster Company is applying to do. I also would like to offer a site visit to any of the commission or anyone in the community who would like to see firsthand what we do. I would like to thank you for the opportunity to present my request and hope you will look upon it favorably, as I believe in the long run it's good for the environment, the local community, the business, and the state. I would like to reserve the right to speak to any concerns that might be addressed to my request, and I would also like to take this opportunity to both thank and invite anyone who wishes to speak on my behalf to do so.
Any questions from the commission from Mr. Vigilante? Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How long have you been aquaculturing oysters in this area?
Roughly 5 years.
Okay. And these two sites, staff has recommended denial of site number 1 and site number 2, and I guess suggested that you simply put those cages down in the other sites. Does that pose problems for the overall business operation, or do you have to have those two sites for your operation to be viable?
I'm going to ask Mr. Nyker to put those two sites back up, if you could.
They're up now.
Okay. Can we go back further to the very first one you had up that showed you can actually see the cages? Because this is an after-the-fact permit, or being viewed as such, you can actually see the cages, so you can actually see what people are asking to do. I'd like to go back to the one that showed the actual cages.
Towards the beginning of the presentation? Right here? This one?
Yeah. If you look at that site right there, and to be perfectly clear, you can see cages right here on my head. You can see the cages on the bottom. That site there is site 1. That site is in front of Mr. Haskins' house. Mr. Haskins has always been very agreeable on a lot of the things that we've done, and we've tried to work together to try to do the right things as far as make sure that we try to be a good neighbor for him.
Which house is this?
That's the house.
To your left, our left?
Right. That would be this house right here.
Where is Dr. DePaul's house?
This is Ward's Oyster Company. This is our dock.
Sure.
This is our dock. This is Mr. Haskins' house. This is Ward's Oyster Company. This is all Ward's Oyster Company. This is part of Ward's Oyster Company, and this is Ward's Oyster Company. This pier and all of the stuff that we float there, we are permitted for and receive permits because we thought we knew we needed one, so we applied for it. This is Mr. King's, and this is Mr. King's. This particular area is where the cages are. This is approximately 300 foot off the ground.
Where is Dr. DePaul's house, John?
Dr. DePaul's house is around here. I can show that to you on another picture as we go around the corner. But the point I'm making on site 1, and this wasn't mentioned in the report, site 1 I only want to use during the winter months. I want to vacate that. It was supposed to be in the proposal, and I thought I had put it in there, but I don't want to use site 1 between the months of from April 31st, everything is out, and everything is out right now currently, and nothing will go back in there until after November 1st. All right, that is as a convenience for safety reasons, so that, like, you know, you can see, obviously, if that's our barge there, to come over here and drop some, or to go right here and drop some, it is obviously very, very nice to be able to have that ability. If you're working oysters in the sites 4 and 5, there's a great potential for, you know, getting wet and, you know, higher wind because of the exposure and all of that. Winter months, it's cold, you know, concerned for my employees, the distance in the summer months as far as, you know. So if you have a place that you can go, like Site 2, which is over here by the Kings, this is Mr. King's house and this is Mr. King's house. And these are Mr. King's rentals. This is Mr. King's dock and that's Mr. King's dock. Both Kings, Mr. King Sr. and Mr. King Jr. are here and will speak either for or against our project. Do you have any other questions?
Mr. Robbins?
I do. You indicate that at Site 1 that's used on a seasonal basis. If that were approved, would you be able to live with a seasonal covenant restriction? In other words, a seasonal restriction on the use of that site from
Site 1, absolutely. I've already given Mr. Haskins my word. That's the way I'm
going to do it. From May 1 through November 1, is that what it would be?
Right, be from August, right, correct, from May 1.
And then how about Site 2? Is Site 2 also a seasonal use or not?
Site 2, if they had if Mr. King requested that or either of the Kings requested that, I would be willing to do that. But they haven't, I don't believe they've expressed that at this point. But if that's their wishes, I would be willing to do that.
Do you need to use Site 2 there during the summer months or could you vacate it during the summer months?
It's convenient that if you go out and you pick up 30 cages and you want to drop, say, 20 off and work 10, you know, it's nice to have a place close that you can just drop and grab. That is a convenience.
Thank you.
Any other questions for the applicant? All right. Thank you very much, and you'll have an opportunity to address the question. All right. Can we have the lights on, please? Who do we have in protest that wishes to speak? Okay. You don't have a representative? Do you all want to speak? I will allow you all to speak, provided you are not repetitious. All right, Dr. Paul, we'll start with you. I'd like to swear you all in, if I may, one time to save some time. If you all stand and raise your right hand, if you intend to speak. Anyone else? This is an opposition now. An opposition, all right? You swear the testimonies you give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth shall help you God. I will ask you to state your full name and where you live when you come up here. But before, I maybe just out of procedure a minute, I didn't call for the pros, and we normally take the pros right after the applicant. So if you'll have a seat, then we'll call you. Is there anyone here in favor of this application that would like to speak? Okay. Raise your right hand. You swear the testimony shall give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth will help you God. Thank you. And I'm on the same restriction on you. I'll allow you all to speak, provided you do not repetitious. If you say what the person ahead of you said, I'm going to cut you off. All right? Start with you, sir. We'll start on this side and work our way right over.
Doug McMahon, owner of Chesapeake Bay Oyster Company. I'd like to speak to a couple of points. First off, I'd like to speak to the character John Vigliotta. I had the opportunity to work with John Vigliotta over the last year from February 2005 to January 2006. Was on his site for 2 to 3 days a week, every week for that entire time, during which I was actually in the process of harvesting and purchasing oysters from him that he had farm-raised. During that time, I never once witnessed a conflict with his cages with anyone who was a private boat owner. I also witnessed John always trying to do his best to be in compliance with the law. Economic value. I've been raising oysters now for 5 years as well. My company produces the gear and produces oysters. This, as I see it, is a great solution to the environmental challenge we have in the bay and the economic problem that we have for our watermen. One of the things I would also like to address that's come up in the first three permits that we discussed was the half a cent per square foot fee that totaled $5,000-some for Lake Coward, $4,000-some for Bevins, and It was never mentioned what the total was for John Vigliotta per year for that water column lease. One of the things that we've tried to do was to come up with a method that would allow watermen who already have leases to farm oysters in an economically viable fashion. A $5,000 a year lease is going to eliminate many of those men from having that opportunity. The leases that we use on our own personal farms are on oyster leases, and we stay within that one-foot rule that's been discussed. $5,000, we purchase 1.5 million seed per year, 2 millimeters in size. It's like sand. It comes out to about $11,000. $5,000 a year for leases is going to really hurt that. My concern is that that becomes the standard in these processes as we go forward. One of the things that we used to model our company was the success on the Eastern Shore that the clam growers had with taking a struggling industry and making it now a commodity on that side. And one of the things that they did in order to produce quite a few clams was to have co-offers, smaller farmers on oyster leases raising clams. And they've done that quite successfully. And that's one of the things that many of the men here who are already in this business are looking to do. Rufus Ruark Sr. cannot be with us today because he had a low blood sugar incident this morning. They're already looking at using on the Rappahannock River smaller farms. Men who have leases, 10, 20 acres, or subleasing on top of them. The last two comments I'd like to make, I apologize for my nervousness, I've never spoken in front of your board before, would be on the environmental value of what we're doing. In the literature that I've received that the Army Corps of Engineers put together back in 1986, that many have used for just oyster habitat, what do oysters do? A female oyster produces between 23 and 86 million eggs per spawn. Now, it depends on the size of the oyster. John Vigliotta's cages will hold approximately 3,000 animals per cage that are capable of spawning. Now, many of the growers use a triploid version, which does not reproduce. Many of us use a lot of diploids that do reproduce. Those oysters go on to reproduce. We do not take anything from the water that we didn't already put there, and actually our oysters put more back in. As John stated, there's spatfall that comes from these farms. When we first started, our oysters in the first season didn't have any overset. We always have overset now on our farms. The last thing I'd like to talk about is the buoys and the long line. Where we are located on the Rappahannock River, our location, we were forced to go to a long line system because of our exposure. The long line system is not necessary for everybody. It was for us because we were looking to protect our product from a couple of things. One, predators, but not predators that have been discussed about today. I'm talking about men who come along and like to take stuff. If you can't see it, it's harder to take. Two, it was from storms. On the Rappahannock River, where we're located on the southern shore, we have great exposure. My longest night was during Hurricane Isabel, while I had over 200 cages in the water, wondering if our system was going to hold. While many other farms on the York River lost cages, lost gear, I came down to the water and we had two cages slide and catch on the line and we didn't lose a single thing. The systems do work. We can hold our gear in heavy weather. The other part of that was aesthetic value. If you can long line, you can clean the top off, and we have great support from our neighbors in that region. However, I have a tough time with the fact that because we want to put a crab pot buoy on top of a cage, that we're now subject to paying this extraordinarily high fee for use of the water column when you can only, in the permits that I've already heard, use really 8 inches of that water, and we're paying all that money to have a line and a buoy go to the top. While the crab potters, and nothing against them, we work well together. They know where my stuff is. I know where their stuff is. They can move buoys all over the place. And at certain seasons, they load the creeks up. So it does need to be addressed as we go forward. I think your comments, Mr. Fox, were wonderful. I would like to just close simply by inviting all of you, if you would like, to come to our farm, see how else it's done. We actually have found it black to be the best color on buoys for not being making them invisible. This is one other comment. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Mr. King.
Charles Edward King, Jr., and I expect I know more about what goes on next door than a lot of folks. I'm right next door. A piece of property that Ward Seafood is on came from the parcel that I live on, which now belongs to my mother-in-law. And my wife and I live there with her to take care of her. She's 93 years old. And just wanted to say that John Bigelata is the best neighbor anybody could have, and I don't believe he would do a thing in this world to disrupt anybody from going or coming to their property on the Ware River, or put his pots out there so he couldn't get to your dock. And if you look downriver from John's dock there, that's our dock, and that's our house. So we're right next door, and you can see there are pots out there pretty close in front of my little dock. But I can assure you that he wouldn't put pots out there so I couldn't get to and from that dock. And I hope that the folks here will, if they haven't talked to him, they will go and talk to him and tell him what their concerns are, and I'm pretty sure that he would do what he could to take any fears away from what they think he could do under, you know, certain conditions. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. King. Yes, sir.
Afternoon, gentlemen. I'm Andy James. Andrew James Jr. is my full name. I own the property in the dock, which it's just a little bit upriver from John Vigliotta's place. Would be right on the edge of the picture. My property is inshore of the pier. The pier is 220 feet long. I also own property on the creek, which is downriver, and one of your overheads showed real clearly that creek and the channel going in and out of there. And so I own property on that, too. I'm a licensed Coast Guard captain. I own a 35-foot boat, which I run out of the 220-foot pier that I have adjacent to John's. And my only concern was that I often go at nighttime and when it's foggy and whatever. I just wanted to make sure that it was going to be clear that I could get in and out of there no matter what the weather was without having to pick through buoys and getting wire in my wheel and all that stuff. So I took the time and went over and sat down with John and Linda, and they assured me that it would never be a problem, even with Site 1, which is right adjacent to me, if that's approved. They said it was ever a problem, that they would take care of it. But I've known these folks ever since they've been here, I guess 20 years. We did business together, and we were friendly neighbors. They always did what they said they were going to do. That's what I like about them. And I feel like when they tell me that this is never going to be a problem for me, then it's never going to be a problem for me. I believe that. I don't have any problem with this project at all, as long as they do what they say they're going to do. My main concern, other than the navigation from my pier, is for my property and for the property owners who live on this creek. And I don't know if we can get that photo back up or not, but it clearly shows a channel, a narrow channel, which goes into that creek and out of that creek, and it circles around a little island. You can go and come either way, actually. It's probably 10 piers on that creek, and it's probably...
I can put it up there.
Okay, but it's probably 15, 20 boats that go and come in that creek. It's not a Coast Guard channel. You can probably see it there.
As long as that remains open, you're okay.
Well, right. And that's the concern of probably half the people that are opposing this project. They live on this creek. I came with two guys today who live on this creek. My sister and brother-in-law just built a new house on this creek, and they're concerned about that, and I feel like that John and Linda are going to take care of that too. So I know that aquaculture is the way of the future. It's the way that our oyster industry is going to survive all of this, I feel like. And for that reason, if for no other reason, I'm in favor of this project. I think that your two sites down by Jarvis Point are excellent spots for these pots. Linda says it's going to be probably 80% of them put down there. So I think that's the way that they need to really gear this thing. So thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. James. Anyone else on this side? Anyone else in favor of the project? Mr. Leggett.
Good morning. I'm Tommy Leggett. I'm the Oyster Fishery Scientist for the Chesapeake Bay Foundation. As Mr. Pruitt knows, back in 2000, we came before the commission seeking one of the first, I guess, oyster farming permits in the Commonwealth to operate our oyster restoration farm. And some of the goals of that program were, first, to restore oysters, help to restore oysters in the bay, and a secondary goal was to promote native oyster farming in the Chesapeake Bay, and I guess it's starting to work after 5 or 6 years. As you can see, more and more people are coming before and asking for applications. So we do feel it's a good thing for the bay. It's good ecologically. It will help go a long way in achieving the tenfold increase in oysters in the Chesapeake Bay. And I just hope that the applicant and the protestants and staff can work through this and come up with a good compromise for the project. But we do support Mr. Vigliotta's application. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Leggett. All right. Now, we'll start with the no one else in favor that wishes to speak? I'm sorry. I missed the ones on the front here. And Jack, I missed you. And Mr. Baco, come right on up. And then Mr. Coward, and then Mr. White.
My name is Dan Baco. I'm the owner of Sarah's Creek Shellfish in Gloucester Point, Virginia. I just wanted to speak briefly to the commission on the safety issue that John brought up for Site 1 and Site 2. I don't have the luxury in my shellfish operation to have the proximity of that kind of relay in a non-polluted water because I'm tucked up into Sarah's Creek. But from operating my business for the last 5 years, I could see how the safety of his people would be greatly enhanced by a wintertime operation of being able to move product in that fashion. And from a marina's owner standpoint, I could see very little conflict with the residents. And I think the commission should consider.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. I missed you earlier, and I apologize. And then Mr. Cowart, and then Mr. White.
Kent Kurkowski, Middle Peninsula Aquaculture. I first met John Vigliotta in 1987 when the late Mike Castagna and I went to visit and advise Mr. Vigliotta on his hard clam nursery that he had set up at that time at Ward Oyster. In fact, I was so impressed with Mr. Vigliotta's integrity that we were partners in Middle Peninsula Aquaculture for 10 years, and currently Mr. Vigliotta is my former partner, and the RUARC are my current partners. As for Mr. Vigliotta's integrity and the fact that this is an after-fact application, had he been aware of the fact that he needed a permit, he would have gotten one. I'd like to point out an incident from about 4 or so years ago when QPX was killing clams on the Eastern Shore Seaside. Research by BIM showed that clams coming from Florida were especially susceptible and that there would not be any insurance claims paid in the future to Florida Seed. And BMRC staff went to look at the import permits to see exactly who was bringing in Florida Seed and was determined that they were unable to do so because the vast number of people did not apply for permits to legally import seed from south of the Virginia line. And at a shellfish forum to address that point. Shortly thereafter, VMRC staffers went and brought the entire import list from the past previous years, and it was remarkable for two things. One, the absolute brevity of the list. It was little more than a single typewritten page. And the second thing was that the bulk of the people who were asking for import permits was limited to two individuals or two entities. One entity, of course, was the Virginia Institute of Marine Science, and the other was Mr. John Vigliotti. So had he been aware of that requirement to have an application that has these structures, I'm certain that he would have done so. And I would ask the commission to approve his application. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Parrott?
My name's Lake Coward, Coward Seafood Corporation, and I just would like to say that we have dealt with John Vigliotta and actually Mobjack Bay Seafood, which is his trucking company, for a number of years. The man does what he says he's going to do, and if he tells you he's going to do something, and certainly he's tried to address I think these some of these issues. I've had several conversations. He's been up to our office and talked with us, and I just think that, you know, he's tried to do, he has two facets of his business, the trucking company and the oyster and clam operation. I don't think he shucks any product in this operation, but he depends on this for his living. But I would hope that the commission would look favorably on this. I know that certainly there are issues that you have to work out. But I think that I would hope that the public would hold in, you know, certainly a comment that we made in dealing with one of our landowners, and that is we hope that the ecological benefits of this project, in our case our project, will benefit you in the future and the future property owners of your property. Clean water and a healthy bay play an important part in determining the economic value of any upland property. And I truly believe that what takes place would do that, and with responsible ownership and responsible operators, I believe that we can do the things that need to be done. So I would hope that the commission would give a lot of consideration to this and come up with an answer that's that certainly would be livable for Ward Oyster Company, and have a lot of respect for Bill DePaul, who is in opposition to this. He's a good guy and has been an industry person for years in his operation at DEM. So hopefully the commission can give this a solution that will satisfy the parties that are here.
Thank you, sir. All right, Mr. White.
Thank you. I'll be brief. John Vigliotta is a stellar individual. I've dealt with him since at least 95, and I'm impressed. He's always been honest. He's always been helpful. He's always been willing to go the extra distance. With regard to cages and equipment, this is very important. The cages that you saw on the screen, those cages are identical. And depending on how they're used or the time frame they're used in, one activity is legal, one is not. You take oysters or clams from polluted water and put them in non-polluted water, it's legal. You put oysters from unpolluted water into unpolluted water, it's not. You leave the oysters in there for more than 15 days, then it becomes wet storage. This is ambiguous. This is very difficult in a difficult industry. We are all trying to find and feel our way through this. I gave up a very lucrative law practice to devote myself to the oyster in the Chesapeake Bay. I do public education. I'm growing oysters. I'm very successful marketing oysters in Washington. I could not survive but for the fact that I can buy my product from Mr. Vigliotta. I will tell you that he produces the finest oyster there is. These oysters are voted number one in Washington against all the top oysters in the country. And that's coming from a time that major purveyors of oysters in Washington were uninterested in Chesapeake Bay oysters. They were too troublesome. The quality of them was bad. They're a superior product. And this is the wave of the future. This is a sustainable resource. This is exactly where we've tried to get industry and everything going. We should not throw impediments. We should not try and prevent probably the most successful man. I would challenge anybody, any institution in the Commonwealth of Virginia to come and show and prove that they do more for the environment, more for the aquatic resource than Mr. Vigliotta's oyster company does. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, sir.
My name is John Erickson, and I'm a 16-year resident of Gloucester and a property owner in the Ware River. I firmly believe that the only future, at least the immediate future, for the oyster industry is aquaculture. And I think that Mr. Fox, in developing a standard, is correct. But I also think time is of the essence. And if aquaculture is not allowed immediately, we're all going to lose. Now, I've known John Vigliotta for many years, and his operation is as clean, environmentally sensitive, and as quiet as he can make it. And the seafood industry is necessarily a little bit messy. He's also a community-minded person and takes part in community activities frequently. The Ware River in the past has been a river with a lot of commercial activity. For the last 20 years, since its sedimentation has taken place, that activity has ceased for a large part. The residents are not used to seeing the river used commercially. The Cone, the Yakamico are heavily used. I think residents in the Ware River are just not used to this activity, although if it doesn't take place there, where can it take place? That's all I got to say.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else in favor? I was in favor, yes, sir. Sorry, I missed you.
Well, I'm actually in between.
Okay, did I swear you in?
I'm not a con. I'm Blair Farenthold.
Yes, sir, Mr. Farenthold. Did I swear you in earlier?
Yes, sir. I stood up and raised my hand.
Well, you're in there.
Said what you told me.
That's good enough for me.
I have lived in Gloucester since 1937. I came back after schooling in 69. For the first 5 years, lived on Hockley Point, just north of John's place. He wasn't there then. Andy was. So I've observed that location for a right good while. I've since 69, built a house and live around the corner. But I use that river year-round, as does my children and grandchildren. I know John's work. I had a black Labrador that tried to work for him for a couple of years, but it didn't quite work out. John gave his workers an incentive. If they got there before Buck did, he'd pay them extra, and they never did. Ware Neck is, and the Ware River is a unique place and location. I hate to even talk about it because some of you might come over there and look at it, and then it'll change more than we'd like. It's untouched on land and the river. The commercial activity that was just mentioned is very private. Mostly the people in the, what do they call it, Guinea? Working our waterways. Andy had an oil distributing business on it. The only other business location is this one that John currently has. In 69, I saw your old friend Jack Folks a lot for $22,000. I was able to buy it back in a couple of years after that for $200,000. That same lot right now would cost about $500,000. Carter hit it right on the nose for Mr. Fox. Should I call you Mr. Fox today? And several other people have hit it on the nose of the term conflicts. And economic impact. Very key statements. I am aware of John's work in the past, and I know it has presented some minor conflicts. People talk about traversing through those buoys. You really don't want to do that. And you really don't have to do it, as Andy said, because the channel is elsewhere. But those people that live adjacent to those buoys and those people that live and want to look out across the river, which is absolutely beautiful. And there are more of us now that are looking out over the river than using it. Wonder what that is. There is an impact. It is primarily, and somebody said, well, it is mostly residential. No, it is residential. And John, other than the Wareneck store, is the only commercial location on Wareneck. And there's not another commercial location on the Ware River or the North River. What he and I hear and have read about with the increase in his production will have an impact. And it will be a conflict. It is a conflict, and it will get greater. I'm in the real estate business. Didn't want to tell you that to start with.
You had me fooled. I thought you were a minister.
Excuse me, Mr. Van Hall. I had to do that.
I sure don't want to tell Peter Worthington that. But I will tell
him. Please do.
Where was I? I'm in the real estate business. Have been since 1963, and the primary thrust for many years was appraisal work. Still do appraisal work. I still sell property, and I almost sell exclusively in Wareneck. Economic impact is great on the plus side for this aquaculture business. But I can tell you, the old real estate adage, the three things that are important are location, location, and location. And sites 1, 2, and 3 have an adverse impact on the residential property and values in Wareneck. And I won't get into John's plant location. There are a couple of houses and properties that certainly adjacent to it, and Charles King has stated, you know, his feelings about it. There are other very adverse feelings in the area that I know about. And I'd hate to think if there's litigation that can result from such a project that it would give any number of lawyers a great deal of work. And as long as they hire me as the appraiser, then that's on the plus side, the economic impact for me. But I will say this, from Wareneck standpoint, in my mind, for somebody that's been there almost 70 years, sites 1, 2, and 3 are wrong, and there are places for it, and 4 and 5 certainly get there. I'd just as soon it be over there near the Guinea Marshes. But maybe the location, the soil, or wind, or whatever, doesn't work over there. But I know you're going to give it the proper consideration. It's been an education being here today.
You're so knowledgeable about the area. I would like to ask you a question about the seasonal offer that he made on those two sites. Does that affect your thinking any?
It does. We live there. This is not a seasonal location.
No, I know that.
The people living in Wareneck don't want to live there for a short time of the year.
But they won't be using it during that period, what I mean.
Oh, absolutely.
Not as much.
I keep boats in the water and use them all year round. Children do, grandchildren do. My grandchildren tried to fish over top of John's cages, and 2 or 3 times they came out and said they couldn't do that. His grandchildren don't like John as much as I do. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. All right.
The last two or so witnesses have mentioned lawyers. I guess it's time for a lawyer to get up here, but I'm certainly not interested in my economic benefit. My name is Andy Malcolm with Troutman Sanders in Richmond. I represent several landowners in the area, but just so you know, I'm not just a city lawyer. My family's been in Wareneck since 1900. My grandfather bought a place in 1930. I've been there every summer my entire life. one of my clients is Betty Barr Old, who lives around the creek. I spent one summer doing pretty much anything she asked on her home. I painted houses on Jarvis Road one summer. I use this river all the time because the public landing, as many of you know, is upriver, up in the courthouse. My father uses it. I'm very familiar with the area. It's interesting. I think there's more agreement here than I originally thought. You know, I'm a litigator, an environmental litigator, where it's contentious, there's conflict, and a lot of times when I represent a citizens group, it's we don't want the nuclear power plant, we don't want the sand gravel mine, we don't want this. I haven't heard that from any of these folks. They all agree that agriculture is a good thing. They all agree that the bay needs cleaning up. They're like oysters. That's not what this case is about. This is not against Mr. Vigliotta. This is not let's get rid of this project. What they're asking for is compromise. And I'm a little bit disappointed in the staff report because there wasn't much compromise. I read the staff report as kind of like these are the benefits of aquaculture, these are all the good things about it, but there wasn't much written about the detriment to these folks. And I'm aware that in any subaqueous permit you have to consider the public trust document, you have to consider Article 11 of the Constitution. The statute itself says you have to consider the interest of the adjacent and nearby properties and other reasonable uses. And I believe that's what's going on here. And the reason I say compromise is because the people I represent are not opposed to sites 4 and 5 on Jarvis Point, which is a good site compared to 1, 2, and 3. There's plenty of room. Ward Oyster has leases out there, could easily take the 500 cages from 1, 2, and 3 and move them out there. It's not near the main channel. Site 3 is right next to the marker and the channel where everyone goes to go up to the public landing. My father goes down there. He's 76 year old, and he's concerned about that corner. People aren't used to seeing seas of buoys around there. Site 3 is a terrible spot. At night and at dusk and in fog and at weather, that we don't have a problem. No boater with any sort of boat cuts Jarvis Point. We all know there used to be an island out there. We all go around. It's well marked. I don't believe it'll have any impact on Mr. Vigliotta's business. His original proposal had 1,500 cages out there. His modified proposal has 2,000 cages out there, and he's not even sure he can grow his business to that level. So let him work his business out on points, sites 4 and 5. And we all know he can come back and reapply for a permit anytime. So if you deny 1, 2, and 3 now, and it turns out there's not as much problem, or this aquaculture develops across the bay in a less intrusive fashion, which I think is going to happen, then he can come back and we can consider sites 1, 2, and 3. But there's no reason to force him into 1, 2, and 3 at this point. The other thing is there are no clamming operations out on Jarvis Point. That's one of the main concerns of the people along this shoreline. They've dealt with the cages. And when I also know the Yocomico River because my wife's family's over there. I think once those people over there see the cages in the water, they're going to have concerns, just like these folks do. They've experienced it. This is not the fear of the unknown. This is the fear of the known. They know what these cages do. And the problem with Site 3, it's right next to his clam relay area. So we have a double whammy of we already have a problem these people are complaining about, and now we're going to stick Site 3 right next to it. Well, out on Jarvis Point, there aren't the clams. You won't have this double whammy right in front of Mr. DuPont's, DuPaul's pier. The only reason I've spoken to Chip Nykirk and Mr. Crabb before this, and the articulated reason at the time, and I asked for Mr. Vigliotta wanting him in close, was that he didn't want to, in rough weather, he might have trouble. And one, I had to think of all the years I've seen oystermen out in the bay in every sort of rough weather, way out in the bay. So I think it just didn't make sense to me that rough weather would be the reason. And secondly, an oyster is not a flower. I mean, a flower comes up You got to harvest that if you're in the flower business and get it out because it doesn't last long. An oyster, if you have rough weather on Tuesday and Thursday, or Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you just come the next week and pick the oyster up. They don't go bad. There's a big window of time that he can get those out. He also can bring them out before a storm and refrigerate them. So this is not a commodity where you absolutely have to be out in the water on a particular day. So what I heard articulated was he needed some to be convenient to his business. That's the only reason. When you contrast that with the economic problems that Mr. Fahrenholt has spent on property values, the extreme opposition of these landowners who have seen it, who have lived with it, I don't believe that the balance favors sites 1, 2, and 3. Again, it's the combination of the clams and the oysters that have caused the problem. There's plenty of room out on the point. We also have a barge operation, which isn't mentioned very often, but even if you put a little channel through these buoys, you still have to bring the barge in. So effectively, the entire area where these buoys are is taken because the barges are out there. I noticed in Mr. Bevin's proposal that they had to be cleaned and washed every 3 to 5 weeks, I think it was. Well, that's a lot of washing and a lot of barge. They're in, they're out, they're moving them around. I also note in the Bevins and Coward proposal, they're a lot further from their operations. I mean, there's Mr. Vigliotti's facility, and there's Jarvis Point. You can see it in the same picture. I mean, he could not be much closer to where he has to go. And when you figure the spectrum of areas in the bay, 4 and 5 work for a variety of reasons. There's no little. I haven't heard any opposition. They're close to this facility. They're not near a channel. There's no clams out there. He's got plenty of room. He can work around the SAV beds. It is a perfect solution to a problem that takes into account all of the issues. One thing is, you asked, I think, earlier, which people who are opposed to it wanted to speak, and they all stood up. I think there's some people who'd like to stand up just to be opposed to it who don't plan on speaking.
All right. Thank you very much. And we'll note that.
And these are, I'm afraid I don't know everyone, but I think all of them are residents in the area. So anyway, I think the bottom line is this commission deals with this all the time, the conflicts of issues, and especially in a new industry. I mean, we've had two proposals today. I read in the paper that Mr. Bayko wants to expand his. I know there are other seafood companies here. My view is you need to go slow. You need to take time to let this develop. So let's let him do it out on 4 and 5, where he already wanted several thousand cages. And hold off on this area for now, at the very least, to see what happens. It seems like an easy solution that balances all of the interests of the parties. It's not perfect for Mr. Vigliotti, but as a waterman, you're not entitled to a perfect solution for your business. You're entitled to one that balances the interest of all the parties. And so the people I represent would be in favor of not having 1, 2, and 3 and keeping the operation out on sites 4 and 5.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, Dr. DePaul, and then I'll work my way this way, so if you're the ones that want to speak.
Good morning, Mr. Commissioner. Good morning, Commissioners. First of all, I would like to point out, my name is William DePaul. I live on Wernette, and I am here as a private citizen. Many of you know that I work at the Virginia Institute of Marine Science. This is completely different than that.
We're not going to ask you about scallops.
That's good.
Could you show me where your property is, Bill? I've been trying to get somebody to show me.
And as a point of clarification.
You can use the pointer.
Let's see, where is it?
Show him how to do it, Lyle.
Where is it? Right here?
I had to do
it. Oh, there it is. It's a line there, right there in front. Point of clarification. Let's see, where are we? Ron? See it up there? It's not on. Okay, there we are. My pier is here. Mr. Robbins asked where my pier was.
Mm-hmm.
In that other photograph, my pier was not there at the time. That's my pier there. This is Area 2, right. Not this. This is Area 1. This is some cages in the water that are not designated. And this here is Area 2, according to the map. Please pay attention to where my pier is and where that dot is going to be, because I have a photograph later on. So that's my house. That's my pier. Property line runs right out here and then just short of those gabions. Those gabions are not mine. Please note the channel, access out, and out here. First of all, I would like to point out that I am not against aquaculture. I am for environmentally and socially responsible aquaculture. And there's a very big difference between the two. I'd like to also point out that we, people on the Ware River, especially around that point, have to look at this oyster application in context of what we are experiencing right now, at least what I'm experiencing. So, Chip, could you help me do that? I'm going to show you some photographs, and then I'll speak some more about what
your presentation.
Yeah. This is not summer. This is last November. This is Area 2. This is from my dock looking over here. This is his, after his relay operation. This is after the his after-the-fact, Mr. Bibliotis, after-the-fact application. This is where Area 2 is going to be. This is right out in front of my dock. This is still November. As you can see, piers all along. Really, there is no way out of shoreline out into the channel. Here is another one. This is the fall of 2005. This is summer, and I wish I could have better shots, but this is from my dock looking upriver, and this is in relative to the clam relay operation. These clam floats are all along here. This is looking downriver. As far as you can see, these are floats for the relay cages. And in what happened in the summer of 2005, I had two or three people try to visit my property, and they could not get to my pier because of the relay cages, totally blocking off the access to my property. That's when I initiated a letter to Commissioner Pruitt saying that something should be done. And we had various conversations, but not a lot of the questions that I asked in my letter of 2005 have been answered relative to the relay. Now, I know relay is not part of this application, but this application has to be considered in context of the relay operations that go on during the summer. Probably, I'm not sure the exact number, Mr. Bugilata could probably correct me, but I would say on the order of 700 cages, several hundred cages out there during the summer at any one time. This is from my pier looking out. As you can see, there's the line of pots. These are not seagulls. These are not crab pots. All along here. This is also later. This is fall. But here again, there's some cages sticking out of the water. See all the cages out here. This is so-called near the Area 3 where he wants to put it in. These are all relay cages, but they're all near the surface, as you can see, and there's one on the end. This is really not conducive for being able to recreate out in the water with canoes, kayaks, or whatever vehicle that you may want to use. Here again, this is fall. As you can see, these are right under the water. These are hazards. There's no question about it. You hit with these with a boat, and you don't say, oops, excuse me. You say something else. Here again, this is exactly in front of my house. We talk about aesthetics. This is what I live with all year long. should be some more here. I think I've lost the slide. This is what is in front of my property right now. This is his boundary of his relay operations. This is my pier. There's his yellow flag. Different perspective. My pier, yellow flag, everything will be out here. How can I consider being in favor of an aquaculture operation that, in conjunction with the clam relay operation, basically takes away my water? That's the bottom line. See, I'm done. How do you get off of this? Okay.
All right.
I have a few more comments to make. In conjunction with the oyster application and the clam relay operation, we're looking at a potential of over 3,000 cages in the Ware River. That's a lot of cages, a lot of buoys. With regard to water access, I mentioned people could not get to my house because of cages and the buoys. The buoys effectively take up a three-dimensional structure. You cannot go through them. You cannot even kayak through them at times. Never mind putting a powerboat through them. As far as the environmental effects that we've heard so much of, please be careful about accepting environmental impacts that are attributed to wild oysters on the bottom to oysters grown in cages. They are not the same. And in fact, there is good scientific evidence to support the fact that oysters grown in cages have little or no positive environmental impact. When you consider the impact on the bottom, not only with where the cages sit on the bottom, but they cause scouring and sediment redeposition within a 1 meter square around those cages. Then you take into effect the periodic cleaning of oyster cages in the water, putting in sediment and other organic matter back into the water, and then you add in the shoreside operation. I doubt if you're going to get a positive environmental impact out of those kinds of operations. So please be careful when somebody talks about positive environmental impacts. They are not the same between wild oysters on the bottom and oysters grown in cages. And I can provide anyone with the references, scientific references to that, if they wish. Let's see, anything else? So I really don't want to repeat anything. Mr. Fraunhold talked about negative impact to property owners. This is disturbing. We look at this all the time. I have had talks with John Bigliotta when his barge ran over my crab pots that I have in the river and sort of flattened them out. And I, he shrugged his shoulders, and really I still have to face that. So there are quite a few things that we have to face as property owners on the Ware River in face of these oyster applications. So I will be glad to answer any questions. I think there are other people that would like to speak. And so I will just answer any questions that the commissioners may have of me, and I'll depart.
Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Paul, I do have a couple of questions. Just so I understand your opposition is, And as it may relate to a possible seasonal restriction on some of these sites, if we were to have a seasonal restriction, for example, on site number two, is your primary objection to the aesthetics or to the manner in which it limits your access to your dock? Okay. So a seasonal restriction would only mitigate one and not the other.
I live there year-round.
Right.
So a seasonal restriction really doesn't. As it was stated, I think most of the people do agree with 4 and 5. I think we have problems with 1, 2, and 3. 3 especially, in conjunction with the clam relay. And if you would like to, if you would notice where that flag was on the end of my pier, if you move downriver from that, that is exactly right across that channel. Right across the channel that people were talking about in terms of access. So you have an area of clam relaying cages, and then you have an area of oyster cages. So you're effectively putting six or seven, probably several hundred yards of water in context of using cages, either aquaculture or relay cages. So no, seasonal things are not what we're here for. We're here for access to our water and the benefits of living on the waterfront.
Thank you. Anyone else from Dr. Paul? All right, thank you. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Thank you. My name is Burke King. You can refer to me as King Number Two. You heard from my father earlier. I'm the second house downriver from Mobjack Bay Seafood or Ward Oyster Company. I purchased the property from my father 2 years ago. First, I'd like to begin by thanking John for the good faith dialogue that we've had over the past several months related to his permit application. Mr. Vigliotta has been a very good neighbor to me in the 2 years that I've owned the property, and as you heard from my father, he's been a good neighbor to my father, who's owned that property for many years. During that time, Mr. Vigliotta has been a great neighbor as well. This property was originally purchased by my grandparents in 1933. I was born in 1963, and I have spent a lot of time down on the Ware River on this property during my lifetime. I explained my concerns with this application in a letter dated March 9th to Mr. Nykirk, which I believe you have a copy of. It was probably the late addition to your package that Mr. Nykirk mentioned earlier. Several of my concerns have been addressed by Mr. Vigliotta in the concessions document that he made part of his permit application, and I very much appreciate his willingness to address those concerns. However, I still have several objections to this permit application. First, the cages located on sites 1, 2, and 3 are too close to residential properties. You've heard that several times already. These sites are very close to the shore and, in some cases, directly in front of piers. Site 2 is the site that is closest to my pier. It is immediately to the downriver side of the end of my pier. The requested aquaculture cages in these areas, which are in addition to the cages deployed as part of the relaying operation, will impede access to residential shoreline as well as piers. As such, I concur with the staff's recommendation to not allow cages to be placed on sites 1 and 2, but I would go further to recommend that the number of cages that would be permitted in Site 3 either be eliminated or sharply curtailed. My second point is I maintain that the total number of cages in this application is simply too high, regardless of where the cages are to be located. This request is for 2,500 cages, which is in addition to the 500 to 600 cages that may be deployed during the summer months for the relay operation. Clearly, 3,000 cages on the river the size of the Ware will have an impact on recreational users. The 3,000 cages and their buoys will clearly detract from the river's natural beauty. I don't see how grass will grow. I learned a new term today, SAV. I don't know how SAV will grow in any site where these cages are deployed. And I'm not a scientist, but I just question, too, what's the long-term impact of putting so much metal in the water on a year-round basis. And finally, these additional cages will exacerbate the onshore operation nuisance, primarily driven by the power washing operation to clean the cages. Simply stated, I believe the Ware River is too densely populated along the shoreline and used too frequently by recreational users for such a large number of additional cages. My proposal would be that the commission consider significantly reducing the total number of cages that are approved as part of this application. I recognize the difficult task that the commission has to balance the business needs of Ward Oyster Company with the rights of property owners to protect their investment and the rights of recreational users. I believe that accepting my proposals to move to deny sites 1 and 2, as well as reduce the number of cages in site 3 and reduce the number of total cages approved as part of this application. I believe if those are accepted, that this would strike a nice balance that would meet the needs of Mr. Vigliotta's business operation, the homeowners, as well as recreational users. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. King. While we're waiting for the next speaker, I want to tell you, those of you that are on the agenda for later items, we're going to break for lunch after this case for approximately 30 minutes whenever we finish this. So if you wanted to start going to the restaurant, you may. Yes, sir.
My name is Tom Haskins, and my wife Kitty is with me here today. I'm the resident in Gloucester on the adjacent property, number one area, since 1968. I'm pro seafood industry, but I have concerns about the changes I've seen over the last 38 years. It's a traditional oyster house there. It was Mr. Jarvis's. Before I came there, it was a nice quiet area. It's transformed into a trucking company, a manufacturing company, a storage area, more than an acre and a half of land. I got 5 trucks out there, runs adjacent to my house, less than 100 feet. Knowing this was grandfathered, I was there when they grandfathered the area. I've worked with John over the years. John is, we've agreed to disagree in a lot of areas. I don't know if you've ever smelt a rotten clam or oyster when the wind is, you know, bad, especially oyster. We worked that out. Still working on noise problems, running of diesel trucks all night. But that's not your area. But what I'm trying to put across is the impact with the growing business. My major concern is increase of growth of the oyster pots along with the clam pots and the crab pots. You don't have to have a boat. You could walk across the river possibly. Concerned about my property value, my access, like you see, you saw Area 1. John says he'll do it periodically. I just don't like to see them. I've seen them sticking out of the water. They're not 300 feet from shore. They're more like 150 feet from shore. Now, I only have 150 feet on the water. I don't know what impacts my riparian rights as far as a half acre. That's gone from 100 to 215 feet or whatever it is. Another concern is from a layman point of view, is a lack of a comprehensive plan in the seafood industry. We're talking 2,500 pots now. What's to say you can't put 100,000 pots out there? That's my concern from a river standpoint of view. In conclusion, I just say I'm against the plan as I understand it now. I'd like to see changes in parts of the movement 1 and 2. And I'm sure John and I will have other things to discuss after this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name's Raymond Friend, and I'm also a resident. I live upriver about 3 boat docks from John's seafood business, and I think he's had a good business there. My issue is that once I learned about this, and I learned about it by word of mouth, I called VMRC and started investigating a little bit, and I've discovered that other seafood businesses have been buying up leases from the James River north, and basically all of Ware River has been leased out. Most recently, within the last couple of weeks, 250 acres out in front of my property, which consumes the rest of the Ware River practically, has been leased for oyster rights. Now, earlier today, we've heard that it's not viable to seed oysters and just throw them out there. Several people testified in the oyster business that that just doesn't work for them. They can't make money doing it. So why would they be investing money in all these oyster rights? And basically, it sounds to me like the entire Chesapeake Bay is up for grabs for for the oyster business for people that want to get into aquaculture, because that's the only aspect of it that's proven to be viable. And I have a lot of concerns. I just bought the property where I have right now for several hundred thousands of dollars. It's doubled in value according to the assessments this past year. And all of a sudden, I'm seeing little red flags dotting the entire river, and I can see what's coming. This gentleman wants to increase his business, and I'm sure that everybody else in Virginia that's in the seafood business wants to get just as much as they can and grow their businesses. That's the American way, to grow your business, double it every 5 years or whatever. But like other people have testified, there are other uses here. It's a residential area. We pay a lot of money to live in that area and to use that water. We pay taxes for it. And by granting all of these seafood companies the ability to go out there and harvest oysters and grow oysters and basically turn the river into their own personal farms, I think one of them, they said they were able to lease 250 acres for $1,000 for oyster rights out there. That seems like a pretty low fee to have your own 250-acre oyster farm out in the middle of public waters where the rest of us live there every day. The boat traffic, the barges going up and down the river. Now, I know we've seen a map of the different sites where it's proposed, but I've seen the barges going all the way up the river and back several times a day. The trucks in the evening. Now, if we're going to increase the number of oysters we're harvesting, then we're going to need to increase all the other aspects of the business, the number of people that we're going to hire. A lot of these people are very low-income individuals. I know we have a house at the end of my lane full of non-English-speaking individuals. There's a number of them there. We're going to have more trucks. We have trucks now running late in the evening up and down the road. And if we're going to double the number of horseshoes, then we're going to double the number of trucks. So there's a lot of different aspects to this that really need to be considered. And I, again, believe my shoreline. I go out there and pick up trash from buoys, plastic, these plastic bags that are like a mesh. All different kinds of debris, plastic crates wash up the shore. So not only is it the oyster culture business, but it's also then we're going to add in the crabbers and all of the other folks that want to do seafood. By the time you're done with it, it's one great big seafood farm out there, and we're living there and having to deal with it and look at it every day. And so I think that we all have a certain right to this property and usage, and I would like to see you guys consider our usages of it as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else that hasn't spoken? All right, I'd like to thank you all, both sides of this issue. You've made very good presentations. We do have now, have the applicant has a couple of minutes to respond to some of the things he's heard. John, we have to limit you to this part because you've had your first shot.
Real quick, like, I'll try to be as quick as I can. As far as the pier is concerned, that little pier that you saw sticking out on my property, right, for years, that's where we used to unload oysters that were caught in the Ware River. And Tommy Kellum, or actually the Kellum Seafood, still has the rights to use my pier if oysters ever come back in Ware River. My question is, and I understand that I am the only or one of the few commercial people in Wareneck, but does that mean that, you know, I should be treated, and my rights as a business should be different than anybody else? Does that mean that I can't do business in that area? Why are my rights different as a business owner? Because the property values have gone up than they were back in 1940 or 1950. As far as Mr. DePaul's complaints about blocking off his house, I would like to take this opportunity to actually apologize to Dr. DePaul if I had blocked him off at any point in time. We have always been able to navigate our barge, which is 32 foot long and 18 foot wide, easily through our cages. But in hindsight, looking back and looking at some of the photos that, you know, Dr. Paul had shown, and if you recall earlier, there was a yellow marking on one of the slideshow that Chip had put up there. That's 150 foot wide direct access way to Dr. DePaul's dock. I will be willing to take PVC and mark it with red on one side, green on the other, and mark that line channel directly to his house and make sure that nothing is in that area blocking. That would separate between section number 2 and section number 3. You know, the size of my relay operations. Now, I used to use my relay square, the relay square I was talking about, I used my relay square in the winter months to put my wet store clams in because I'm not using it for relay. Right now, the wet storage has been pushed under my aquaculture permit, so that's also part of my aquaculture permit. So, therefore, that means that that relay square will be completely empty through all of the winter months because we don't relay in the winter months, right? A couple other things I'd like to address. The cages that were out of the water. We used to put our oyster cages on the shallow side of the relay square. And when the tide would go out, the oysters would come out of water. Therefore, you could see the cages. Also, you saw a picture of one cage that was on its side. The last thing we want to do is put a cage on its side. When that happens, the cage, we'll lose the animals in the cage, basically. We can't tell that that cage is on the side until the tide goes out. We go out there, we try to drop our cages without that happening. If the cage ends up on its side, tide goes down, we see it's on its side, we right the cage. In the permit, they asked that I move all of the cages from the shallow water to the deep water. So all of those cages that you saw pictures of that were sticking out of the water are gone. There was 175 of them. There's about 20 more that have to be moved, and then that's it. That area where you saw those pictures, where those cages are, is not up for grabs as far as needed for cages on. That's part of the four-foot mean water, you know, low water. As far as the sheer numbers that was spoke about and what I do at my place as far as sheer numbers, I can honestly tell you that in 1991, I had 8 trucks. I have 5 now. My sales this year were 35% less than what they were in 1991. We used to shuck oysters at our facility. We started at 5 o'clock in the morning. We don't start till 8:30 in the morning now. I have no more than 1, maybe 2 trucks a night that will leave out of Wareneck between the hours of 6 and 7:30. And that's not an unreasonable amount of traffic for Wareneck. As far as the polluted relay and the number of cages that are going to be there, in the relay right now, we're buying roughly 10 to 15,000, which is about roughly 10% of what we used to buy when we used to relay clams in 1991. We used to buy 100,000 clams. We're buying 10 to 15,000 a day now. That's why we're doing the oysters, because we need something else to do because there's so few clams down at Boat Harbor. And that's why there's only 3 relay people where there was 15. So, you know, as far as the relay is concerned and how big will that relay and the amount of clams that relay is going to do to this program, at best, I might have 100 to 200 cages of relay clams during the summer months, and then it's over. I've tried to address any of the issues, and anybody that I have inconvenienced in the process of trying to make a living, I do apologize to. I want to thank those who came and spoke on my behalf. And anybody else that does come or does have an issue with anything that I do in the future, I'd be more than happy to have them come and look at what we do or come and talk to me, and we will, and as I always have, try to accommodate them as best I can. I thank you for your time and hope you look favorably upon my request.
Thank you very much. All right, this matter is now before the commission for discussion and action.
Mr. Chairman.
We've got Mr. Garrison and then Mr. Robbins.
I need to ask Chip a question.
And we also have Vins here if you need to ask them anything. They're here patiently waiting.
Chip, you recommended on site 1 and 2 it be deleted
Yes, sir.
In the testimony looked like today, was there any no neighbors objected to Site 1? This was a temporary storage area?
No, actually, there are objections.
There are
objections
to Site 1.
That was Mr. Haskins
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also have a question for staff, Chip, if you don't mind. Sorry.
You just won't stay there, Chip.
Yeah. Could you please call back up the photograph of site number 2 and site number 3? Yeah. The water depths at site number 3, I mean, Dr. DePaul had a photograph he indicated that was in site number 3, and it showed exposed cages, but I note that on the permit.
This would probably be the best one to show.
Okay. Well, on the permit, as you've, or in your staff summary and recommendation, and also in this list of concessions that have been offered by the applicant, it says that all cages would be located in waters from 4 to 6 feet mean low water depth. So,
couple of things going on. Remember that relay square is out here, which is shallower than site 3.
Than site 3, okay.
There's also cages that are kind of over in this area, some up here that are shallower than that now, that are proposed to be moved out to 3 if 3 is approved.
Right, and the relay cages are not before us for consideration. I mean, that's outside of our consideration. But site number 3, if these restrictions are applied such that they couldn't be placed in water depths less than minus 4 feet MLW, they would not be exposed because the cage height is 2 feet.
It should be 2 feet over top of them.
Okay, and as far as hazards to navigation, et cetera, I believe you said you had a recommendation from the Coast Guard this week that the perimeters, the boundaries of any of these areas be marked with a floating marker or fixed marker?
Let me pull that up. The Coast Guard indicated they had no objections to the proposal. Go on to say, however, this does not absolve any applicant of any liability. Coast Guard recommends the applicant mark their sites 1, 2, and 3 with a regulatory information marker, which you can see it as this square with a diamond inside. It's recommended that sites 4 and 5 have 2 markers for each site, and that they be placed on the outside channelward corners. So I'm assuming here, 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 and here. The applicant would also be required to prepare and provide for the Coast Guard approval private aids to navigation application.
Okay, but wouldn't all of the sites be required to be marked?
Yes.
Okay. And could you also please go back to the aerial photograph of site number 2?
Okay.
So we can see its relation to those docks again, please.
This is site number 2 here.
Okay, and how does that relate to egress coming out of that creek area in terms of boats that would be coming out of the creek to the right?
Out of here?
Right.
Okay. Right now, the polluted square probably has more of an impact on that area than this one would. This one is close to Mr. Burke King's pier here. And then there are also currently some cages down here on this Crittenden lease that will be moved offshore further as well.
So those will be moved into Area 3?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
All right. Yes, Mr. Badden had a question.
I don't have a question. I have comments when you're done asking questions.
Okay. Any other questions for staff or Vince? All right. Thank you very much. Mr. Badden.
Heard a lot of things today, and I just like to set the record straight on some of them. A lot of you don't know me, but I'm the waterman's representative here on the commission. My family's been in the water business for much longer than Virginia's been a state. We lived on Chincoteague back in the early 1700s. People are not interested in growing their oyster businesses. They're interested in keeping an oyster business. When I was young, we had 12 or 13 oyster houses on Chincoteague. Now we have none.
the product's dying, the fact that developers have made, which you can take responsibility for some of this, waterfront property has become so expensive that you'll never have people buy waterfront property and set up any kind of seafood business again. Evidently, land's a bargain where you are. I know people pay $500,000 for a 40-foot wide lot on Chincoteague just to demolish the old house and build a new one. I go to a real estate school every day of my life. My wife's a principal broker in a real estate office, and at night I go to school. I think we're putting things out of context. All the buoys that we're talking about on 500 cages, 250 buoys, would pale in comparison to one small boat being anchored in front of there. It would take up more volume than all those buoys would. We're talking about 250 times that. I think we all bear a lot of the responsibility for the problems with the seafood industry and the health of the water, period. At one time, you could look at this picture right here. You can see all the land behind where people live is still forested. At one time, it all was. It had a natural buffer zone that kept sediment from going into the rivers. We've done away with that because everybody wants to have an unobstructed view. Unobstructed view has consequences, and consequences is siltation, among other things. Everything we do adjacent to the water ends up in the water eventually. So, you know, for to think that this man is trying to not be a good steward, he is. I believe oysters filtering water is important whether they're wild or aquaculture. I have a great deal of respect for Mr. DePaul. I've made the comment quite a few times, and I'll make it again now. If him or Dr. Jones told me what I was doing was going to have a definite adverse effect on something, I would stop. Now, they're the only two scientists that I would ever make that comment about. So, you know, I don't take anything that Bill says lightly. I just think we need to move forward. We either got to take it seriously that we want to clean the bay up or we don't want to clean the bay up. We got to get rid of nutrients. This is the best way we can do it. Oysters filter way more than anything else we'll put in the water. I think the applicant has made all kinds of concessions. I think we're already at the point now that we've had a compromise. Basically, you know, I like to see everybody be happy, but it's just an impossible fact. So, saying that, thank you all.
All right. The matter is before the commission for action.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Robbins, I don't normally do this, but Dr. DePaul asked a comment. Could you come up? He's in favor. Yeah. Come up here, Bill. Up here to the.
Does not show my peer. My peer is something like this, and this is why 1 and 2 are acceptable, at least in my view, because you need to keep peers in context. 1 and 2.
All right, thank you. Mr. Robin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with some of the elements of Mr. Bowden's comments, specifically the fact that concessions already have been made in this case by the applicant. I note that there were some concerns raised about the lack of compromise, but it seems to me that we have a list here that staff's put together of the items that the applicant has compromised on. And one of those compromises is to double up the cages and have 2 cages per buoy in order to minimize the number of buoys. And in order to do that, he had to build the barge with a special overhead I-beam arrangement, and that probably makes it less stable. And I think that does raise the need for him to have a place where he can work during inclement weather. And consequently, I think it would be appropriate to have at least one site near his facility that would do that. And I think to the extent that we have to try to mitigate the competing uses here and try to minimize the impacts to the property owners in the area, I think I think it ought to be the less obtrusive of the two sites. And I think to that end, I would move, Mr. Chairman, that we approve the permit to include site number one with a seasonal restriction of use from May 1 through October 31, and deny site number two, but approve sites three, four, and five, all of which must be marked in accordance with the Coast Guard recommendations and the other terms and covenants as recommended by staff.
There's a second to that?
Second motion.
Second motion.
I want to clarify, you mean the seasonal restriction would be he can use it in the winter, he cannot use it in the summer.
That's correct.
I think you fit it backwards, but...
That's correct. In other words...
Let me get a second here. Second by Mr. Garrison. All right. Further discussion from the commission to the motion.
My second is based on the fact that the close proximity of Site 1, as much as he's worked to adhere to what his neighbors wanted and been a good citizen, a good sport all the way through, I think it's necessary to have that Site 1 in that seasonal limitation.
Any other comments to the motion? Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One other point I'd like to make. There was a comment that the applicant had tried to prevent the use of the area by recreational fishermen, and I guess I would just point out that one of the staff recommendations that we are adopting is that the public shall not be excluded from any areas not physically occupied by the authorized structures.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Then the motion carries, and I'd like to thank both sides of this issue for outstanding presentation. Thank you, and we will now recess for 30 minutes.
Oh, Blair.
The horse expert.
Oh. I'm sure if they live on the Great Bay Line, it's